Welcome, everyone, to Figure Four Daily. I'm Lance Storm. Brian Alvarez is not with us this week, so it's going to be a better show. And I'm going to be joined by five of my high school buddies. We actually go back to grade school, but my crazy wrestling friends, as I've referred to them in the past. I talked about this episode a few weeks ago. I wanted to get them together and do a call and discuss all the crazy things we did in high school, the wrestling matches, the air bands, attending WrestleMania 4, 5, and 6, and just talk about what I was like back then, their thoughts of me getting into wrestling. And to be honest, they're the guys that motivated me to become a performer and get into pro wrestling. So there's five of my buddies, Chris, Mick, Dennis, Ron, and Phil, and they will join me here shortly. So let's go to that interview. All right, I'm joined by five. I'm looking at a screen with six faces. Five of my, what I refer to as my crazy wrestling buddies from high school. I've mentioned you all actually at different times during my career and interviews as my crazy wrestling buddies. I've got Chris, who's joining us from North Bay, where we grew up. Phil, I have no idea where you're from actually now.
Just east of Toronto.
East of Toronto. Mick is in Toronto. Dennis is in South Africa.
Indeed.
Haven't seen Dennis in forever because he's the global traveling scientist. And then Ron back, at least the North Bay area again. So some of you back where we grew up, thanks for joining me. I thought it would be fun for fans, wrestling people, I do the podcast, to hear, before I was a star, stories of the stupid crap we did in high school, some of the fun we had. And to be honest, I probably owe all of you, Mick in particular, a debt of gratitude. I doubt I would have gotten into the wrestling business if you guys hadn't helped me come out of my shell and be a idiot wrestling guy. So thank you. Well, you have to all admit that, again, for a bit of an introduction, for the most part, we were the academics in high school. And actually, some of us go back to like probably grade one. But in high school, we were more often the top of the honor roll, some of you more than me. But they wouldn't have anyone that knew me back then. I can't imagine anyone would have thought this is what I'd end up doing for a living. So, what are your initial thoughts on how, again, either we became friends or, again, became knowing that we were hooked on wrestling and being crazy? Because, Mick, you seem to be the kingpin, in my opinion, as far as the craziest outgoing wrestling fan.
Yeah, the most enthusiasm, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you, and again, the Saturday Night Main Event, I think, was when wrestling blew up for us as fans. And I remember watching Saturday Night Main Events at your place. So you were sort of the kingpin that was gung-ho that brought quiet to calm me out of my shell.
Yeah, I mean, I think I always watched wrestling before that, even the George Cannon wrestling and whatever we can get on TV in North Bay. But when that Saturday Night's Main Event came along, I think it, you know, I realized it can be more of a show and not just the actual wrestling in the ring. I think that's when I think I even got more interested in it. And I guess we were playing volleyball together. You, Ron, and I were all in the same team. And, you always had athleticism from the beginning. I remember you had a really high leaping ability as well back in volleyball days. So, I don't know where how we ended up doing some of those shows in high school and getting so crazy. But that's sort of, I think, the Saturday Night's Main Event was definitely pivotal, I think.
Yeah, because I always joke that there's only two kinds of people in the world. There's wrestling fans and closet wrestling fans. And I think up until you, I was the closet wrestling fan. Like, I watched the Road Warriors in the AWA and some of the international stuff that we used to get out of Montreal. And then again, when the Saturday Night Main Event hit. But it's like, I don't think I thought it was acceptable to be the crazy wrestling fan. And then I realized that, wait a minute, my other buddies are crazy wrestling fans. This isn't so ridiculous. But so that's where it came for me. And just, we should probably just jump into the show so we have a more tuned topic. Again, I think Mick was the instigator that wanted to actually do what's now considered backyard wrestling, but we didn't know that was even a term then. We put on the first one, I think we did it was like a Christmas assembly in high school. Where, you know, right before Christmas break, they put on assembly with some shows and stuff. And Mick got the great idea of, let's do a wrestling match. And convinced me to do a wrestling match for him where he would be Santa Claus. Because Mick has to go over all the time. He has to win. That's Mick. Mix the glory hound baby face. So I was the Grinch, and we put on a Christmas assembly wrestling match with, I think, like one layer of stupid thin gym mats on a hardwood floor, and did a show in front of people. And it's like, that was, I was not the get up in front of people and do stuff kind of guy. So that was a big thing for me.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that one we don't have on tape. What are your memories of that, either Mick or anyone? Hop in and...
What grade was that? That was before the Road Warriors, right?
Yeah.
I think, like, we did the talent show tag match, which involved many of you, and we did the air band with the Road Warriors, which was tremendously both rotten and fantastic all at the same time. And then
lot more fantastic than rotten, though, yeah.
And then we did the pep rally, where actually, like, sold tickets to the school for like a buck to get out of school and come watch an entire show, two events. And then we also did, and I still don't know how we convinced Larry Tugas, our phys ed teacher, to stay after school on a Friday night and let like 10 of us do a pro wrestling tournament in the gym. And thank God we didn't kill anybody.
Well, he was actually your manager, Lance, too.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. In the show. And Peter Randall, the other gym teacher, was stayed around for it. I think just because he was like, what the hell are these idiots doing?
I think it was more about having some sort of supervision in the gym so no spinal injuries would go unnoticed. Because there were some awful, you know, in the videos we're watching, there's some awful landings by some people. I remember Phil in particular, his neck went 90 degrees after I can't remember who flipped him. And I went, oh, that's not good. But obviously, Phil came out of it all right. He can walk still, so that's good.
Yeah. Although I don't remember anything from high school. Maybe that's what happened.
I think the quality got progressively better. I don't know if you remember in the Christmas assembly, we had like desks, I think, with almost a fishing line as the ropes. And then later in the gym, we had the volleyball posts and it was a pretty decent setup, I think, by the end.
Yeah, and by the end, we got, well, it's because we were at the gym and didn't have to carry all the shit to the auditorium. Like, we stacked up mats that were fairly thick, and it was, a reasonable surface to land on. But, again, watching back, I was ready to just die, because I am the most anal retentive guy when it comes to wrestling technique. I've been coaching it forever. I did it, and it's like, I'm like, oh, this is going to be so bad. But I do want to say that I watched it back, and... Mix Tito Santana flying forearm still looks great. And Dennis, to your credit, because again, of all of us, from an athletic doing school sports, you never really did.
You know, really my thing, yeah.
You know, you've probably got IQ of, most schools put together. Your suplex was actually quite good. I know you, Dennis was the biggest Dynamite Kid fan.
Yeah.
And he had to do the snap suplex. Well, it wasn't technically as snap suplexy as Dynamite's, but it was actually really good. And as someone who has taught hundreds and hundreds of people who actually think they could become a professional wrestler, that after, days of me, 30-year veteran wrestler trying to teach them how to do a suplex, still can't do a suplex as good as you. I was pretty impressed. I'm like, wow. And he did a decent diving headbutt. So,
So are you saying Dennis has wasted his life in mathematics and he should have been a pro wrestler?
Instead of all the scientific discoveries you've made in your time and traveling the world, you should have been a... To be honest, what would have been a unsuccessful professional wrestler, but one with at least a decent suplex.
But he would have looked awesome in the tight pants and leather boots. That's it. I don't know. I think the evolution of it, kind of like what Mick was saying, because on Saturday afternoon on whatever the local channel was, you'd always see the George Cannon wrestling, which was, B-level wrestling at its best. And then when the Saturday Night Main Event came, like with the theme music, the splashiness, the whatever, like it was actually pretty exciting. And you see that in the talent show video of what we did up on the stage, where we basically mimic the whole Saturday Night's Main Event with the, you know, You're My Obsession sound music and all that other stuff. So even though it had the crappy desks and everything as the turnbuckles and the corners on the ropes, in general, that match was a pretty good match. So,
and I think we learned to appreciate not just the wrestling, but the referees, the announcers, you know, Jesse and Vince, the Mean Gene, like the whole.
Yeah,
sort of the whole circle of what makes wrestling what it is.
Yeah, and trying to build the match up, right? Trying to build it and get the plateaus and the the peaks for the audience too, so they can get into it.
The thing that's crazy looking back in the, because again, we didn't know what the hell we were doing. We would just, you know, lay stuff out, plan stuff. It's like, I saw this in a match, we'll do this. And in a weird way, we were 30 years ahead of our time, in that when I got into wrestling in 1990, you didn't plan shit. You actually just went out and made it up as you went along. And anyone that planned too much was looked down upon, as in, you know, you don't actually know how to wrestle. But today, everybody plans shit like we did back 30 years ago and 35 years ago. So in a weird way, we were ahead of our time.
That's because we were afraid of just having a 5-minute test of strength in the middle of the match while we're trying to think of what to do next. But for production value, you think now, like the backyard wrestling, imagine if we would have had the latest Apple or Samsung that's around now. Like, you see some of the stuff that people are doing amateur-wise, and it looks pretty awesome. Like, you know, our stuff admittedly looked pretty crappy just because of the video at the time. But I think some of the shows when I was rewatching those matches, I think a lot of them, like Ron saying, did have some pretty good flow, like planning that stuff out ahead of time. And then what you really notice is, like with particularly your matches, Lance, with Mick, is the rest of us all seem to be too nervous about getting hurt. And you and Mick didn't seem to care too much. So, like, you know, you guys had some awesome suplexes, some, you know, atomic drops, all this other stuff. And although it was, you know, a little bit below the arena wrestling we'd watch with Big Joe LeDuc and Sweet Daddy Siki, it could have been like a B-level match on that card, you know, and that local wrestling came to town. So some of those matches were actually pretty good looking at them now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it, again, Mick in particular, because you did not look like you cared at all, where I think I was, and I was this way in wrestling too. It's like I was always more concerned about hurting the other guy than I was about myself. But I think, again, Mick and I, but yeah, if we would have had, you know, if we all would have had an iPhone 12, like we would have had 10 cameras set up and shot the whole thing. And one of us would have been crazy enough to sit in Dennis's basement and edit this together and make a, you know, an actual show that looked impressive with camera cuts. And again, with technique now, we could have, you know, dubbed in commentary and everything, where I don't even know which one of us had the VHS, you know, might have been a Betamax, you know, handheld video recorder that actually recorded this stuff.
Yeah, it was John that had the video camera. So he was always the video guy.
So hold on, Lance, I want to go back to this. You said, you know, not hurting anyone. Are you saying that back then you didn't care if you hurt someone? Like, were you trying to hurt Mickey?
No, I meant I was always more concerned with hurting my opponent than I was about hurting myself. And I was the same way during my career, that, you know, I didn't want to hurt anyone. In hindsight, I probably would have rather hurt Mick a little bit.
Although, well, you know, with regards to the pain, though, like I think I did endure almost every type of suplex, from belly to belly to the super suplex to, you know, the snap suplex and everything else in between. But I kind of did have a bit of trust in you, Lance, that you let me down gently or flatly or whatever the proper term is to, so I didn't get hurt. But there's one time I do remember that was the King of the Ring, because if you remember, it was a tournament. And it was kind of understood that I was going to get to the final and you were going to get to the final. But when it got to the final, there was nothing that was understood, right? In my mind, I was foolishly thinking I could still win. Of course, you put me in a submission hold, which I still feel to this day.
To explain this to everybody, we did all the shows and Mick always won. And we also, we would produce, and Mick was the brainchild behind it, commercials and updates on our West Ferris Wrestling Alliance, WFWA Wrestling League. And because we were top students in the school, we could always get a teacher to approve that this is an announcement that needs to be made over the PA in the morning on the school. And we would produce with the Obsession music theme and stuff, updates on our fake wrestling league. And we decided to crown a champion. I think we just did the commercial on the announcements that we're going to crown a champion. Dennis put together and made a championship belt, which I still have. When this goes up, I'll post a photo on Twitter or whatever to so people can check it out.
Cool.
But at that point, I decided it's like, I'm not losing again. I'm not putting Mick over. So as if we're doing this tournament, and no one could agree who was going to win. So we put 8 guys together, and I think, yeah, all of you guys were in it. And then 2 others, I guess, would have been Craig. Mm-hmm. And who was the other one?
I think Tom was in there.
Tom was right.
Yeah, Tom, yeah.
Craig G.
Tommy K, yeah. Yeah. So we had this tournament, and it was ridiculous in that it was a pro wrestling tournament that we would cooperate and do wrestling moves in. But at some point in time, you had to win for real. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone, I know I didn't, put any thought into how we were actually going to win for real. I just kind of figured that, like, I'm bigger and stronger than everybody, I'll eventually just hold you all down and put zero thought, which, again, today, because I've done pro wrestling and shooting and different submissions, it's like I'm embarrassed by how little I knew and how little plan I had. But we did this quote unquote fake pro wrestling tournament where you had to win for real. And some of the matches were really bad. I wrestled Chris in the opener.
Mm-hmm.
And managed to just catch him with a pin because I think he just assumed I'd let him kick out, and I didn't. And I think Mick beat Tom. And Mick had like a different persona for everyone. He had the Ricky Steamboat music. He had the Randy Savage music, different costume for everything. Mick was into the show. Although granted, and I'm embarrassed by it now because I am not a Ultimate Warrior fan now. I had the face paint on. I had the tassels on the arm. And I was also the only guy in the crew that took his shirt off for wrestling.
It's because you were the only guy that actually had muscles. The rest of us, you see, we're like fully clothed, long sleeve shirts, track pants, lances out there, shirt.
I actually did the whole thing. I ripped my shirt off for the crowd, but I had a tank top underneath.
It's flashbacks to ECW where half the crew wore t-shirts. But again, we ended up, Mick and I, in the final, and it's like, we had done so many of these matches. We had had practice ones and put matches together. So we're doing all of our planned usual spots and stuff to try to have a good match. But then eventually got down. And Mick, I want to know, did you go to one of the phys ed teachers or an amateur wrestler? And it's like, how am I going to get this guy? Because you eventually, I thought we were still working and cooperating. And you hooked me in a double chicken wing.
Yeah,
and tried to roll me. And I will admit, you got close.
But I think I tried to pull a Danny Davis and got, I think it was the referee was Murray. And I said, do a quick count. I'm going to put him in a double chicken. I need a quick count. It didn't work because you weren't losing.
Well, I think Lance just had to sort of flex his shoulders and then you would lose the grip completely, right? Because you're right, Lance, you were the only one that actually worked out. You had like 20, 30 pounds of muscle over any one of us. So we all knew you were going to win, except for Mick. Except for Mick. Mick said, no, he's going to have to work it if he's going to win this belt. And you did, Mick. When we look back at that video, that was a good match because Mick wouldn't quit. And you did have to put him to submission to say, you're done, Mick. It's done.
we did run out of ideas at some point during that match, I think. And exhaustion because it was like the third match.
Ideas. And because I really had put no thought into it, it's like I had no submission technique. It's like I didn't have a whole lot of options, but I eventually did manage to, like, I had caught it was a different move I caught Chris with, because again, I'm assuming Mick was the mastermind behind the switch, in that there was a masked guy in the opening round who I was supposed to fight in the second round, and you switched Chris back in, so Chris has got the mask on, and it's like I legitimately didn't know who it was. And I was legitimately worried with, okay, what has Mick pulled? Who is this guy? And he's got sweats on and a baggy shirt. So I have no idea.
He's a lot faster than the last guy.
Yeah. Well, I literally went up to Craig in the change room. I said, "Hey, I got an idea." So he gave me his sweatpants, sweatshirt, because I didn't have any of that stuff. But then I think it scared you so much, Lance, that you decided to just put me into that submission hold that lasted like 10 or 20 seconds too long. Because it still hurts to this day.
Yeah.
What do you call that hold?
It would be a Samson squeeze or an over-the-shoulder backbreaker.
Yeah, that feels right. Yeah.
That's how your chiropractor diagnosed it. Yeah.
And I remember I got you in it and I'm like, I'm not letting this guy out. So it's like I'm jumping up and down hoping it's hurting. And as you're still staying there, I keep shifting you further back. So I'm just about the point where I'm going to be like holding on to your chin with 3/4 of your body over my back. I'm like, I'm getting this guy. I don't know who he is. I'm getting this guy.
Well, I kept saying, I'm done. But who is the ref? I can't even remember. But it was like, why are you not listening to my voice? I'm done. But it just kept going on and on. And you were bouncing me like a rag doll.
That was a pretty long show, though. Looking at the video, it was 40 minutes and quite a few matches. So it wasn't like we just kind of hacked it out after school in the gym. So it was actually a pretty good show. Mm. So,
yeah. And I think the coup de grace, if you will, was the pep rally where we put on two matches. We had to have like at least 500 people in the gym, right?
Yeah, easily. Triple gym, the bleachers were full. Yeah.
Because again, I joke about it because again, there's a lot of backyarders and guys that wrestle in the yard, but it's like I joke that it's like we actually drew money because we sold tickets for it was like $1 or $2 or something, and the money went to student council. But you got out of class early to go to the gym. So I think getting out of class early was the draw. Mm-hmm. And as long as they were willing to watch us, they were content. But again,
cell phones didn't exist, so people couldn't just sit there and watch their phone. They had to actually watch us. So we had to be entertaining.
Yeah. I remember working on the announcement for that with Dennis the night before, a couple days before at my house. And I still remember it went something like, you know, it's the West Ferris Wrestling Alliance's last appearance. It's the end of an era. Don't dare miss it.
End of an era.
Yeah. End of an era. And it really was. Then also, too, which I think we have to touch on, because this was the air band with the Road Warriors. I've told the story on my podcast many times. Road Warriors, which are who hooked me in wrestling. The first time I saw them come out and just beat the holy hell out of somebody, I was hooked. And they had a music video where they, you know, they basically just stood by a microphone and said the lines. They spiced in clips of their wrestling. And Mick again decided he wanted to do it an air band competition, the Road Warrior video. And I think this might have been one of the earlier on things, because I think he was shocked that I'm like, I'll do it. He's like, really? Like, sure, why not? And we did this air band where Mick and I dressed up as the Road Warriors. He was Animal, I was Hawk, because I have to be Hawk. He was my guy. And in actually brilliant booking, like if I, like with my 30 years of wrestling experience, like we booked this perfectly in that, okay, how do we start? And there was a band from England that Chris found when he was over in Europe at one point, Half Man, Half Biscuit, which is the most atrocious, shitty band I've ever heard in my life. So we got the idea, and was it Dennis and Phil that dressed up?
Yeah, I think so.
It was Dennis and Phil that dressed up, you know, in clothes, and they were going to be Half Man, Half Biscuit. They had fake guitars.
Yep.
And we played the song Len Gandley's Stance. It's on Apple Music and so forth if you want to go find it. And Peter 99 in math, and he's just like this quiet guy. He's the drummer. And we hit the song, and it's wretched. And like the audience is just dying a death with like, what are these idiots doing? This is the worst air band in school history. And then we hit Iron Man, the Road Warriors entrance music. Mick and I are dressed up. We got black sweats with Road Warriors on the side. Mick's wearing a tank top, of course. I'm not wearing a shirt. We've got the face paint, and we used a nylon. Mick put a nylon over his head and cut a hole in the middle to pull his hair up to give him a mohawk.
Yeah.
And I used, I guess it was an elastic band with just a strip of nylon up the middle to get rid of my middle part of the mohawk for Hawk. And I think I made like a wristband and a neck band out of like leather with long screws so I could have spikes. And we come to the ring and beat the shit out of poor Dennis and Phil. And then give them their instruments back so they can play our music. And then
Peter doesn't miss a beat in the back. He's like the mild mannered accountant. He's just sitting there. All the everyone's getting the shit beat out of them. He keeps playing.
And then Mick and I do very bad lip syncing to the Road Warriors. Any thoughts or memories other than, again, Peter Ng being the tremendous drummer?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty awesome. Like the one thing to set the stage for some of the listeners, like my kids' high schools have never had this, but our high school was relatively large for the size of the town. And we had that full auditorium theater with like the AMC style seats that were on a slope and the big stage and whatever. So the air band was up on the stage. So Dennis and I are up there. And to your point earlier about us being the kind of nerdy guys in the school, but we always tried to interject wrestling into everything that we did, which kind of fit with the nerdy image. And then, so the people are watching me and Dennis sing this song, which I don't think is actually that bad, but anyway, they're just waiting for the shoe to drop. And then of course the music starts, but you guys are running down through the wings of the auditorium and jumping up on the stage. So it actually looked pretty cool. Then you just quickly beat the snot out of us and dispensed with us and then moved on to the air band. So I thought it was pretty good because it was like it showed to some of the points earlier, like we're actually trying to put some thought into making a bit of a show out of it rather than you guys just walking on the stage as Hawk and Animal and doing some air band singing. Like we got the crowd involved and you hear the crowd going crazy. And one guy, I forget who it was, it might've been you, Ron, after you beat us up, Lance and Mick beat Dennis and I up, someone starts yelling, "Get off the stage!" And they jump up on the stage with the mask on. And it's actually, I think it was Ron or Chris. Yeah. And then they beat him up and throw him back into the audience.
I think that was Ron.
I remember running up on stage and, Lance is, kicking me very gently. And Mick is like full on steel work boots, kicking me in the shoulder and the head. And it threw me completely off the stage, which is about 5-6 feet off the ground. So.
Yeah, no half measures with Mick.
No.
I haven't watched that again recently, but I kind of feel that toward the end of it, like the Road Warrior part was going too long and the crowd actually wanted the Lang Ganley stance back on.
Wouldn't surprise me. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think we came third. I could be wrong. Dooley won. I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, with my ding-a-ling.
He won.
But he had the highest risk airband because he was swinging in on that rope from the side, right? So he actually put some skin in the game.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead, Lance.
All right. I'm curious, and again, to give some insight here. We also went to, not all of us, but Dennis and I did two or three of them. We went to Mania 4, or I went to Mania 4, 5, and 6. Now, I think it was Dennis, Ron, and Mick that came with me to go to 4. No, Phil had to be
there. Yeah, I was there, yeah. Because we stayed with a relative of mine in Philadelphia and then drove over to Atlantic City.
Was there four of us?
That's right.
Of us went? Who all
that was four. Four. That was supposed to be a four for sure.
Yeah.
Who went? Did you go, Ron?
No, I did not. I only went to six, I think.
Okay. So it was Dennis, Mick, Phil, and I that went?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be. Okay, yeah. Because I remember we had the high school science fair to keep up with the nerdiness, which was in the North Bay Science Fair in one of the malls. So all the schools were there, we had to wait till the judging ended at like whatever 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we left. And so we drove in your like Mazda or whatever you had, Lance, a small little Mazda that drove the 12 hours to Philadelphia. And then I remember when we got there, my sister or someone phoned me and said, well, during the award ceremony, you and Dennis won first place and they were wondering where you guys were. And they're like, oh, they drove to the US to watch wrestling. They couldn't even give a shit about the science fair results. Wrestling's more important than science anyway. I mean, really, God.
That's too funny. And then it would have been Dennis, Dooley, and I that went to five, right?
I think so. Yeah, because
Dennis was at Waterloo. Yeah. And in my brain, it was very last minute that Dooley decided he was willing to drive. And we got what was technically ringside. We were like the shittiest seats that were ringside.
That's right.
I don't even think we spent the night. Like, I think we got in his car, drove to the building.
Drove straight through. Yeah.
Watched the damn show, got back in the car and drove all the way back. And
where was five?
Yeah.
Same place, Atlantic City.
Nice. Atlantic City as well. Trump Plaza.
That's a long drive, 12 hours. Like 12 hours from North Bay, like a good 10 hours from Southern Ontario.
Yeah. And I don't think we slept. The trip back was brutal. I was sick. And I have a memory of, I don't remember if it was Dennis or Dooley that was driving, but someone was getting really, really tired. And I was sick. Yeah, so I'm laying in the back seat. And I get woken up and we're on the side of the road. And like the other guys are like white as a sheet. And it's like, obviously the dude fell asleep behind the wheel and thought a transport was coming at us and woke up in a panic and pulled over to the road. And it's like, we're going to die.
Yeah. I think that was Dooley driving at that point. I remember that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where it's like, okay, maybe it's better the sick guy drives than the guy that's, you know, hallucinating.
So we were really excited about that WrestleMania 4. I remember we had signs made up with bed sheet out of sheets or something. And I think it was a British Bulldog sign. And there were several of them.
Didn't you guys get a thumbs up from Vince?
No, from Jesse the Body.
Jesse. Yeah. Sorry.
We did all those banners in Dennis's basement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had the Bulldogs. We did the big flag with British Bulldogs right now because we're all just gigantic British Bulldog marks. We did the Body for President because we were also Jesse Ventura marks, which, again, my opinion has changed since.
Hey, he made it to governor.
He did, but I met him, so I'm not nearly as big of a fan anymore. And then we had a strike farce because we hated Strike Force.
Strike Force.
No, we love Tito. We love Tito.
Because I remember too, because Strike Force was not a particularly popular team with a lot of fans, that we held up the Strike Farce banner in because we were right beside the announce desk, and fans nearby like wanted to fight us until they realized it said farce and not force. They thought we were pro Strike Force and were like getting mad at us. And then when they realized that it was to explain the joke, then they were cool with us.
We're being a bit too clever for the wrestling fans there.
Yeah, they just assumed we spelled it wrong.
But we had pretty crappy seats. But looking back at the pictures, like you say, we were right beside Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse the Body in the big, huge clearing where they were doing the announcing from. So we had some pretty good, pretty good viewpoint of those guys. And yeah, I got the big thumbs up from Jesse.
And the cool thing for me, and I don't remember which one of you, a few of you did call me, text me, whatever the technology was at the time.
I think it was Carrier Pigeon.
Yeah. But WrestleMania 4, the Atlantic City Convention Center, is the first time I saw Hulk Hogan wrestle. The first time I wrestled Hulk Hogan was in the Atlantic City Convention Center. It would have been on a SmackDown or a Raw. And I remember that day standing in the building going, I've been here before. It's like I was here as a fan. And then I fed the Hulk Hogan comeback. And that was the time, I don't remember which one of you was, but there was a few of you, maybe some of the other guys that were our buddies back then. That's when I got the emails, calls, texts, whatever, with the, oh my God, you wrestled Hulk Hogan. Because as crazy wrestling fans as we were, none of you guys put me over when I started becoming a wrestler. It's like y'all didn't seem to care all that much. And it was like when I wrestled Hulk Hogan, it's like all of a sudden it seemed to be a little more real for you all that it was like, oh my God, he's actually doing this shit.
Well, I don't think it's that we were excited, but it was you were overseas. You were sending us like information. You're in Germany, then you're in Saudi Arabia. I think it was when you went to Japan where we saw some of the flips that you were doing and just that overall excitement within the crowd and the showmanship. We went, oh, well, this is like getting very serious. Like this is like he's sort of your career we can see sort of taking off? Because I'm just, you know, for most of us, I think when we heard you left university to go to what? Wrestling school? But then we heard it was the Hart Wrestling School. We went, oh, okay, that's all right. Because it was the Hart School of Wrestling. It was a connection that we can make, right? So we thought, okay, this is serious. But I'm curious though, Lance, was it that WrestleMania you went to in university that sort of made you think, maybe this is something I want to do? You know, because in high school, we're all talking, you know, we go off to university, you do get our degrees, but there must have been a point somewhere in the first year of university where you said, okay, I'm going to have to apply to go to school to do this stuff.
It wasn't until the second year. And I think the big thing was, like, again, I was a volleyball player, right? I played volleyball like crazy in high school and university. I really hated my coach at Laurier, and he took the fun out of volleyball. And it's like, I started just not enjoying school. And then there was also I missed a half credit on something and had to change. And it was like, I don't even know what I'm doing here. I'm not enjoying it anymore. And I think, so, you know, back in my mind, there's this thing I'd like to do, but my intelligent, well, you go and get a real job, you get a career, you don't run off to wrestling school. Because I wasn't enjoying school, my grades were starting to drop. And it was my roommate at the time, Bruce McGregor. So I can't even track him down. I don't think any fans will. My roommate at the time, who also was on the volleyball team, said, do you ever think maybe your grades are slipping because you're trying to force yourself into making a decision that you're afraid to? And I thought about it. I'm like, damn, you might be right. And the next day I went to the university, you know, student council thing, whatever the hell it would have been, admissions office or whatever. And I talked to them and they said, your grades are currently high enough that if you leave today, you can always come back. But they said another 6-8 months of the trend that you're on now will be asking you to leave. And at that point in time, I'm like, now's the time. And I put in my notice then. And that's when, but again, not like, and this is where I'm different from most wrestlers. Most of them were this is my dream no matter what. And they'll, you know, toll for 20 years, whether they make it or not. I gave myself a 5-year window. It's like, I don't know if I'm going to be good. I think I can. If I wasn't making progress where it's like, you know, people are telling me that I'm good and I'm advancing as a career, it's like, I'm going back to school. And I was making a living in three. So it didn't end up ever becoming a question.
I would assume a lot of other guys, though, like they get into the wrestling, like you say, either it's their dream and they pursue it no matter what, or it's like a plan C, you know, other stuff falls through. And then they're like, well, I can either work on a garbage truck or maybe I'll try this whole wrestling thing.
But you or know, be you an, ha- you, or be you, an accountant.
Be an accountant, yeah. but you know, like here you are, though. Like I remember thinking, like it takes some balls to make that decision, yeah. Like a big pair of balls, maybe even three balls, I don't know. But because like you're on this path of your business commerce stuff to a fairly comfortable life, you know, maybe a couple paper cuts, but like no one's going to tag team you near the water cooler and slam a chair over your head or whatever, right? So it does take balls to make that call, though. So, but I mean, and because you had the brains in school, like obviously you approached this more intellectually too by giving yourself the 5 years, and if it didn't work out, then you were going to pull back. You're not going to be the 37-year-old guy who's still working the Timmins Arena, you know.
I think out of all of us, it would have been Mick would have been the one we wouldn't have been surprised to go on to be a professional wrestler. Because, you know, you're right, Lance. You were the one that was more in the shell, right? You were the quiet guy. You didn't have the showmanship like you have now. I think you had to work to develop that. But Mick, it was always out there for you. So to hear that Lance went to what? He quit what? Wow, that was a bit of a shock because you're the more conservative out of all of us, I'd say. Oh, sorry, Mick, I interrupted you there.
No, I was just going to agree with Phil's point there. I mean, I think it must have been a difficult decision, and even more difficult because you're in this professional career path. You know, whether if you're going to be a laborer, I think it would have been an easier decision, but you had a different path that would have been like sort of the golden handcuffs and much more difficult to leave. So I think that was quite admirable from what I heard about what you were up to and going at it strong in a big way. I don't know if you remember, I got a chance to give a speech at graduation, and one of the lines I remember saying was, you know, some of us are going to go on to be engineers, doctors, lawyers, teachers. And then for a chuckle, I said, and maybe even professional wrestlers. And I didn't think that anyone would actually, even you, I didn't think anyone would go that, down that road.
Well, that's the funny thing looking back, because I've dug through our old high school yearbooks, and the number of comments of people, you know, when they sign your yearbook and stuff, and it's like, they were all completely joking, but did the, oh, hope to see you in the WWF someday. And it's like, oh, it'll be cool to see you in the WWF with a, holding a championship. And it's like, you look back and go, yeah, I did that. But it's like, no one actually seriously thought it. But because we did all that stupid shit, we did, or at least I did. But
I think, too, though, out of the group of us, though, you were the one with the only one with the physique that could make it happen, you know? So, like, it was more believable, even though I remember, like, my kind of second thought when you, when we heard that you went into wrestling, I was just wondering where you were going to fit in, like what kind of niche you were going to carve out, because like your size is big for high school, but you're average, like an average size guy. And when you compare it, especially to what the WWF was all about at the time, where either these people, like they seemed to be in like three different camps, you know, either they had, the size like Bam Bam or the Undertaker, they were just like genetically huge human beings, or they were these guys that were pumping stuff into them and they had a pharmacy bill that would make an East German Olympian blush, you know, like Delta Warrior, or they were guys that like they didn't have a whole lot of ability, but they had a style or some gimmick that people either loved or loved to hate, which is where my personal favorite wrestler is, which is the Honky Tonk Man. So, but I just remember thinking, if you had your athletic ability and intestinal fortitude and whatever, but you were 6'6", 275, it would have been a lot easier to make a name for yourself and climb the ladder.
Yeah, if I was that big, I'd have made so much money, I probably wouldn't even be talking to you guys anymore.
You wouldn't even return our calls.
Yeah, who are these guys? But yeah, I was go ahead.
Sorry, I'm like Phil. I was going, wow, that takes a set of balls, and I'm pretty conservative by nature too. But you're probably more conservative than I am. And I, you know, you left one of the top business schools in Canada, really, to go do this thing. And you know, you were always, you know, one of the top athletes at the high school, maybe even the top athlete in your grade. So you know, athleticism was not the issue there. It was just, oh, you just did a 180 on your career path, and obviously it worked out well, but at the time I was pretty shocked that it happened.
And you know, when I heard about you, I kind of lost touch a little bit during those years, but you know, I heard about you and your achievements in wrestling, but then it's and I thought I could see him doing that athletically and whatnot. But when I first heard you say that line, you know, if I could be serious for a minute, I go, damn it, the guy's got a line. I think that's the only time I became jealous, right there.
He had that punchline.
What was it like for you, Lance? Like, obviously, what was your plan going in? Like, you know, ECW and some of the earlier leagues you're in, they weren't as big on the showmanship, I don't think, as the WWF was more of a circus. And like, I saw one of your tweets this morning, retweets of the number of minutes of wrestling per hour of wrestling. And in some of the big name shows, it's like 15 minutes or 20 minutes of wrestling out of a 1 hour show. But like, what was your plan of attack? Because obviously you knew you weren't 6'6", 275. So how did you approach it going in?
Well, it was funny because if I actually knew what the wrestling business was at the time, there's no way I would have got into it. Because I assumed that, like, Stampede Wrestling, we all remember watching Stampede Wrestling probably. It's like, I'm like, okay, here's this company. And it's like, physically, I'm big enough to be there. Like, I assumed you'd made a good living doing that. Or, you know, AWA was still around. Like, I didn't, never in a million years did I actually expect to be in the WWF, because I wasn't 6'6", you know, 275 pounds. And so me, it's like WCW, where, you know, they had Brian Pillman was a big one for me, because it's like, okay, he's about my size and he's about my athletic ability. It's like, best case scenario, I end up being a mid-card guy in WCW. So I'm like, oh, go try. And if I end up, you know, making a decent living in Stampede, so be it. And then when I got out there and found out, you know, just the lunacy of the wrestling business, and it's like, you just sort of hunker down and push. And I got lucky that I started getting breaks pretty quick. And I think I was only in the business like a year when veterans of the business were like, you're really good. Like, I didn't have the personality yet, you know, by any stretch of the imagination. And some might say I never found it, but. But.
Oh, we'll edit that out later.
But, and I think this goes to, again, the educational front, is that there's a lot of mental aspects of wrestling and the psychology of wrestling, and even just remembering and being able to be out in front of a crowd and think of shit to do, that I got the mental aspect like really good right away. And I had the athletics. So I just needed to, at some point, you know, become more camera friendly with a personality. But I was lucky that, you know, Japan, Europe, all those places I went, that they were more sports oriented. So I was excelling at that in hopes that eventually I'd, you know, find a personality or get a Jim Cornette as a manager, so I didn't have to find one. Because I was, you know, it's weird. Again, I put on a Speedo and go on national television, and I'm like, I'm kind of shy, but I always was a little more reserved. And eventually it was ECW where Paul Heyman helped me find it, that the dry, smart-ass humor that I have with my friends, he managed to turn that into an on-screen character. And then, you know, the line that Mick loves so much, the "if I can be serious for a minute," which was only just a throwaway line in one random promo once. When I said it, everybody in the back is like, that's who he is. It's like, that is so Lance. And it's like, all right, well, there's my thing now. But when you're just so busy doing it, you don't think about it too much.
I guess, like, so does it sound like more like you having to do all the athletic stuff in those smaller leagues, like that ultimately helped you get that break? Like, if you were 6'6", 275 and could kind of barely wrestle, you might have been plopped into WCW or WWF and never really developed that, because you're like a Ricky Steamboat kind of guy, right? Like a medium size but really athletic and a clever guy. So I guess all those smaller leagues actually helped you hone those skills more than if you were, you know, the Undertaker sized.
Yeah, although I'd like to think that if I was physically, appearance-wise, what they wanted, I was smart enough that understanding the psychology end of it, I could have been a big star even if I wasn't as athletic. But yeah, if I wasn't that higher-end athlete, I would never would have had a chance, because I had to overcome the lack of personality when I started. And just, I could get by on he's the best athlete in the company for quite a while. Because thankfully there wasn't Ricochets and Will Ospreys then. You guys probably don't even know who those guys are, but if you saw them, you'd be like, holy shit, did they just, you know, they just got cut from Cirque du Soleil and now they're out here, just, you know, like, you know, they do, again, probably with, if you've seen guys do a 450, which is like a front flip splash, this guy does like 720s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, it, you know, it makes me look like, you know, Hillbilly Jim.
No, but I think, if you go back to like when we were talking about the WWF back in the 1980s, you know, that's where the showmanship, and it became a circus and, you know, the Saturday night shows. But it was always the matches where it was the two technical guys that were having the face off, which I found to be the more exciting matches than the big, you know, Hulk Hogan doing his leg smash or the Andre. I wanted to see the guys with the athleticism doing the matches. And that's where I thought, that's where Lance is fitting in. He's the guy who technically knows what's going on and he's going to give a good match. So I sort of appreciated that was the role that they gave you throughout this. Yeah, and we heard your wry cynicism whenever you were talking and let me be serious, which I think helped in your career because it, well, especially for friends, you know, guys who knew you since, you know, elementary school, high school, we'd be able to watch you and go, oh, that's Lance. That's not some like, who's he trying to be up there? That, you know, you're not being someone else. There's a part of you that we always saw, and it said, he hasn't sold out. He's like staying who he is. He's an athletic guy. He's doing the technical stuff. And that's where I think you found the fans, right? More so than trying to be something for some other people. So I appreciate it. I really like seeing you in that role.
And you've all seen me wrestle live, I assume? Because a bunch of you came to, again, if we end up using the video portion, the photo behind Ron is actually an ECW arena, Burt Flekinger in Buffalo, where several of you came to probably see me wrestle live for the first time.
Yeah, and those are tough crowds, say, in ECW. I remember that. Like, yeah, if someone messes something up and the whole 20,000 people are like, you fucked up! You fucked up! They're just giving the wrestler shit. Like, those guys were rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, they
were. You were smaller than the Undertaker and those guys, but you're by no means small, though. I mean, that's you know, like Coco Beware is probably smaller than you.
He was certainly shorter. Yeah, and that was, again, I was 216 pounds when I showed up to wrestling camp to get into wrestling. So I was certainly bigger than your average Joe, but, you know, smaller than the guys that were 250, 280, 290. And I think I peaked out at maybe 223, 224 in my career.
Oh. Lance, you know what? You needed to drink more milk. Do any of your fans know that that was your drink of choice all through high school? Just milk, milk, milk.
I think all my fans know that I'm like the guy that doesn't drink. I never drank. I never went out. I never partied. And that, again, dates back to whenever you guys started drinking. You guys weren't as straight. I was straight edge before straight edge was a thing, I guess, probably. But yeah, I'm still that way. I'm more just a coffee guy now, but that was me. And I think that's what got me through the wrestling business without, again, Dark Side of the Ring. If you guys have seen Dark Side of the Ring now, starting to expose some of the more degenerate side of pro wrestling, if you will. I think my stubbornness that I developed in high school, where you guys are going to go out and drink, it's like, well, I don't drink, sorry. And I'm going to be who I am no matter what. I stuck to that in wrestling. And now, granted, it was a lot harder to be accepted in wrestling by doing that than it was with you guys in high school. But
we always liked the fact that you were the driver to get us home at the end of the night.
So. I was that in wrestling on occasion, too. I've had to carry guys through airports to get them on planes.
I was going to say, I remember, like, with all the drugs and the steroids and whatever, I remember you explaining your theory of all the steroids do, besides like causing degeneration in part of your body, is they just accelerate your recovery. So your whole theory is, if I just sleep 13 or 14 hours a day, then I should be able to get just as big as those guys. I just work out and sleep 13 hours a day.
Yeah. And I think it became... I think it became an ego thing for me, to be honest, that so many people told me I'd have to take steroids to make it. And I'm just like, I'm going to prove you wrong. Mm-hmm. And that stubbornness and determination. And the sad thing is, there's only probably about, you know, three or four of my closest friends in wrestling that actually believe I never did steroids. But, you know, so be it. I actually went back to our high school and did an anti-drug talk for Tugas to the school at one point in time, which was kind of a lot of fun. Did any of you, I think Mick came to a WWE show that I was on, I think. Did you not, Mick?
There was one in Toronto I went to. I can't remember if it was still WWE or not now. I
think at the Sky Dome?
No,
it wasn't
Dome. The Sky Dome. We
was a smaller venue.
The Air Canada Center, I would imagine. And then, Dennis, were you at the match in North Bay?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so you did that was at one point potentially going to be my last match.
I've
had like a dozen since, but you were just happened to be in the country and in town.
Just coincidentally happened to be in town that week, and you were there as well. Yeah.
Any memories from then?
Thinking that you're on your way to retirement and my career is barely getting anywhere off the ground. that was kind of my thought there. Yeah.
Maybe the memories merge with, because we used to go to that. Was it in the North Bay Arena or where was it? Like
it was in the Memorial Gardens.
We would, like, in addition to the WrestleMania trips, like, we went down to Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto to watch a few events, and then in Memorial Gardens in the North Bay Arena. That's where, like, Big Dolo Duke and Sweet Daddy Siki, those guys would roll through town every once in a while. So,
well, I'm pretty sure Mick took me to my first wrestling show. There was a show at Memorial Gardens. Him and his brother Minto got tickets. Minto didn't want to go. And Mick offered me the second ticket. We went to, I think it was affiliated with the AWA, but it wasn't an AWA show. And we went to my first wrestling show. And it's so weird because there's like a half a dozen people that were on that show that became my colleagues later on.
Oh, really?
So bizarre. And
who were the guys on there?
I remember like Abdul the Butcher was there at that event.
No, not that
one. Is it Terrific Tom Zink? Terrific Tom Zink? Two Toms in there.
I don't think he was on. He might have been on that one because you went to a couple at the Garden. But I know for a fact that there was the Rockers versus Midnight Rockers at the time against Bad Company. and Tanaka. I don't remember the part of it. I'm blanking on that. But Tanaka, I've met on a show. Obviously, I've been on shows with Sean, Marty. Medusa Michelli was on the show, and I worked with her in WCW. And it was just weird with, you know, you're sharing a locker room. It's like, I bought a ticket to see them wrestle. And obviously, like, I was never a big Hulk Hogan fan. But I have to admit, there was a moment where I'm sitting in the locker room going, I'm wrestling Hulk Hogan tonight. It's like, that's pretty damn cool. And then I got lucky that I worked a tag team program. I actually, Christian and I defeated Hulk Hogan and Edge for the World Tag Team titles. And getting to the point where the people you saw as a kid consider you their peers, it's like, hey, brother, how you doing? And it's like, thanks for the match. And it's like, it's really cool to get to that point where you realize that you're now equals with your heroes, if you will. Much like the first time I met Road Warrior Hawk in Europe, I was just like, in the back of my mind, I'm, you know, starstruck and a little freaking out, but it's like, you try not to look like that idiot fan guy.
Yeah, or the 15-year-old girl at a Justin Bieber concert. Oh, it's Justin Bieber! It's Hawking Animal!
Funny story, I had that reaction once from a fan. And this is where I always laugh at, you know, fame. It's like, if you're a fan of something, then that person's famous. If you're not a fan of that thing, they're just some dude. I was returning like a DVD at the video store, if anyone listening remembers video stores, just in my local neighborhood. And I went in, I had to pay a late fee or something. And there was the teenage girl and her boyfriend there, and they recognized me. And I think I was in WWE at the time. And she started freaking out like a fan at a Justin Bieber concert. And she's just like hysterical, freaking out with, oh my God, this is Lance Storm. And my wife's out in the car waiting for me to just drop this damn video off. And she's laughing. And when I had to sign a piece of paper when I paid the late fee or something. And this girl starts crying because, it's, oh my God, they're getting an autograph. And she's like bawling and freaking out. And I'm just like, this is weird. And it never occurred to her to just ask for an autograph.
Did you have your shirt on, though, or you had your shirt off for that?
I did have my shirt on, yes.
Returning all your videos and you're shirtless. So when you're getting like your Blockbuster video card and they ask you, like, what's your occupation? And you wrote professional wrestler. Like, what did the person behind the counter say?
That was the thing I always tried to avoid. It's like, I don't want people to know who I am. And that also, too, is just sort of that different mentality, because most wrestlers, I want to be recognized. And me, it's like, I'm putting on my hat, I'm putting up my hood, and I'm hoping nobody recognizes me. I'll get recognized when I get to the show, but not before.
And it was, I guess you don't seem to think like you're going to be recognized at a Blockbuster video or whatever, you know, video store, right? You're just going about your day, but getting that reaction, you know, I know you're saying like you weren't really prepared for it, but eventually, I don't know, I guess people are laughing at that. I have no idea who's laughing in the background, but but being prepared for that, were you okay with that level of fame? Like, you know, you see it when you're in the ring, you hear the crowds going crazy, but just, you know, going to buy a liter of milk at the convenience store, is that something you've have gotten used to, or are you just not never going to get used to that?
I was lucky in that, again, my whole life I never went out. I don't go out. People don't see me. But Canadian fans are just so much better than America. Well, I don't know if it's better, but American fans are the come up and mob you type of people. Canadian fans are the ones that will nod to you from across the room and just point that, hey, I recognize that guy. So it's like, I never had that. Like, I think the closest, when I was on the road full time, it would have been WWE. I'm home like, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, and that's about it. So it's like, I take my daughter to lunch when she got off, you know, school. I pick her up at school. We go to McDonald's for lunch, you know, every Wednesday or something. And teenagers would start recognizing me. But even them, for the most part, would not much more than, hey, Lance Storm, cool, hi, and would leave. But I did notice it then where my daughter would be like, oh, do you know them? And I'm like, no. And it confused her. Like, why are these people saying hi to my dad?
And nobody teases me at school, too. I can't figure it out. My dad beats people up for a living. That was so nice to me.
Because of my dry personality and my size, when I would pick my daughters up at school, you know, we'd all walk, you know, you get there early, you're standing in the schoolyard waiting for your kid to get out, and they run out and you pick them up. At one point, they thought I was her bodyguard. Because, you know, Mr. Stern-faced big dude standing there not talking to the other parents,
not
because
smiling.
That's the thing that regular people, you regular plebeians here, you don't realize that you don't see, like, when I'm home Tuesday afternoon, I leave Thursday evening, I don't see any of the other parents and kids and friends, like whoever my wife, like, you get together on weekends when you see people, you work during the week, so I'm the invisible parent. Like, my wife's
Lance, family. Lance, we're living in a society. You got to talk to people.
He is. He's talking with us right now, man.
But, like, even with my family, they started joking to my wife. It's like, are you really married to this guy we see on TV? Or are you just making him up? Because family reunions, family dinners, get-togethers are always done on the weekend. I'm never there.
Mm-hmm.
So none of my family ever met me. And again, especially my married family, obviously my brother and my mom know me, but like most of my in-laws, it's like they never met me until much later. And so again, you know, the school get-togethers, the PTA get-togethers, they get to know your other, you know, your kids' parents. It's like no one knew me. So I'm just the occasional stern-looking guy standing out in the yard picking up a kid that, and again, I've always had that thousand-yard stare where I look a little bit unpleasant anyway, that they would just thought, it's like, I'm going to stand away from him. And like, that's who it was. So again, I think that helped me deal with the fame because I came
off a little. Yeah, you came off to be like, don't approach me or I'll beat the hell up, you know, something like that. Is that what it is? You people feared coming up to you?
Well, but I think too, and this is where you talk about me having to find that personality and showmanship thing. When I became a heel, that serious don't mess with me, son of a bitch heel, which isn't a big stretch for me as a person. Like, I practiced it 24/7. And this is something I've told my students to do. It's like, if you want to be a heel, you have to project a degree of menace. So it's like, if I'm standing in line somewhere, again, I want to return something or I'm angry, I didn't get my upgrade or whatever. It's like, I'd stand in line and stare a hole through that person, hoping that they would be afraid of me before I even got there. And you get what you want. And so if I am out to dinner with my daughter and I see the, you know, the teenager starting to recognize me and it's like, they're going to come bother me. And again, if I'm not with my kids, I don't mind, but it's like, okay, I have 3 hours with my daughter every week. I get to get lunch with her. And it's like, they'd start the, oh, hey, that's not something. It's like, I'd stare at them to try to send the message that you do not want to walk over here. And it generally worked.
Your best Russian hitman stare.
Yeah.
Separate question. You didn't do steroids. What do you do now to keep in shape? Because you got to keep in shape even in sort of semi-retirement and keep up your work in the post-wrestling sort of era for you. So that must be pretty difficult.
Not really. Like, the big thing is, like, again, I still like going to the gym. I've been lifting weights for 40 years now. I started when I was 12. But with lockdown and COVID, it's a pain in the ass. But I've got a decent home gym, you know, set of dumbbells, a bench and stuff. So it's like, I've been getting by with that and, you know, either doing treadmill while I watch shows on Netflix or hiking mountains is the best I can do now. But there is something to muscle memory. And it's like, once you've developed that, it's quick to come back. And so once, like, even if I get as out of shape as I get, 3 or 4 weeks of like hard training, it's like I make a lot of gains and get back to, wow, this guy's still in shape. And just, again, clean living, like I've my whole life, it's like I don't drink, which is a lot of extra calories you don't need. And I'm still physically active. I'm just the same dude. And thankfully, again, because I was a smart worker, I didn't get a lot of injuries. So it's like my knees are still good. My back is still good. Like, obviously, there's minor issues, but.
One of the things, like watching those the tapes, like just going back to the high school and the origin, is like, you know, we're joking before about you were the only one with your shirt off because you're the only one with muscles. But I remember when we were watching the video of one of those shows, like you had Dooley up, and just for good measure, you pressed him like 3 times. And at the time, like Dooley would have been like 125 probably. So that's no small feat to be 18 years old and pressing 125 pound wriggling.
I thought it was Mick. Didn't he lift Mick over his head a few times?
Well, he's lifted most of us over his head at one point in time, Chris. But like, where like, where did that start for you? Like, I remember we had a weight room at high school that I looked in the window through a few times, but like, where did your whole weightlifting stuff start? Because obviously if you hadn't have started that when you were 12 or 14, you wouldn't have been like the volleyball guy and then the guy who could have springboarded into wrestling. So how did you get into staying in shape?
I think the motivation was I was a big Arnold mark. Like, I think, you know, Arnold and Sly, the big jacked up guys you see in movies, I thought was cool. My dad was a weightlifter when he was younger. So I like, hey, I want to work out. I want to look like Arnold, right? Because you're just a kid that wants to look like Arnold. There's probably a billion of them. But I thankfully had the genetics and the work ethic for it. So I asked for a set of weights, you know, when I was 11, got them when I was 12, Christmas, whatever year it was. And I started working out, and my dad, because he was a lifter, he taught me how to lift properly. So by the time I got to high school and they had that shitty weight room, like I thought,
I thought
it was an oasis. It was a universal machine.
Yeah.
But by the time I got there, I'd already been lifting weights 2 years. Like, and I remember, I don't know why, but because I was training, it's like I had a big growth spurt before high school. So we start high school at like 14. I was 185 pounds.
You were that big back then?
Yeah, I was over 180. I was benching in the universal, not real weights, but it's like I was benching 300 pounds in like grade 9, maybe grade 10. Because Tugas, our one phys ed teacher, he still tells the story. He's like, I couldn't believe it. He's like, I got to the school and it's like Peter Randall's like, take this kid to the weight room. You won't believe it.
Look at this freak. Look at this grade 9 freak.
But because I remember there was the universal, like, you know, you put the pin in the weights and you push it. And the stack, because that was a big thing. It's like only a couple guys in the school could bench the stack. It was like 255 pounds or something. And as a grade 9 student, I was lifting what the grade 12s and 13 football players were lifting. And I was, you know, doing the stack for a few reps, you know, early on. And that's why, again, all the football coaches were like, why are you playing volleyball? And I think it was just spite. Everybody told me to, you know, men play football. And I'm like, well, I can be a man and play volleyball. And it was just to be the other way. And it was the same thing with, like, you know, wrestlers do steroids. It's like, well, I'm going to do it without. And that's where that mentality started. And yeah, it's funny because I, you know, when I posted that I was going to do this, I heard from a few of our, you know, former friends from high school and classmates. And everyone's like, I remember you pressing Mick over your head. And it's like, I watched all these videos. I'm like, I pressed Dooley. Now, I probably pressed Mick at the first show. But yeah, and it's funny watching because, like, Dooley has no idea what he's doing. He's not helping at all.
You know, like a limp, like a limp fish up there, and you're just
you're
like,
supposed to post off the guy's shoulders and help, but it's like Dooley's just doing nothing. And I but if you remember Janet, the artist,
Janet Pace,
yeah. She lives like up in Northwest Territories now. That was the thing, she's, I just remember you pressing Mick and thinking that was just like the most amazing thing ever. And it's like, okay, I guess that's, but it's funny because, again, I was the big powerhouse muscle head in our wrestling league. And it's like, I'm the tiny fast guy in real wrestling. Although today, because the business has shrunk so much, I'd be the big power guy again. But the thing that I find weird, again, I mentioned Dennis actually having a good suplex with no training. And I guess it's probably because you guys were all smart and had, you know, success of some degree on the horizon. I ran my wrestling school, which you can see behind me on the video. The vast majority of the students that come through there, or at least a good solid third of them, would be Dennis's and Phil's and Mick's, where it's like they were just big wrestling fans, thought it was cool, and that's what they wanted to do. Even though realistically, not to insult any of you, you know, Dennis is not going to be a professional athlete. I'm pretty sure he's smart enough to figure that out. But so many of them don't. They just figure wrestling's fake. I'll just learn how to do it. And they show up. And like I said, it's like I've had students that, you know, spent 12 weeks training and didn't do as good of a suplex as you did with 0 minutes of training. And I remember having Mr. Tulisalo. I can't remember his first name.
Ray
Tulisalo. When I went back to the school to give the drug talk, he had the big, it's a shame you didn't use your education. And I'm like,
but I was like, oh, I'm sorry. That is just so, what a bad comment. You didn't use your education.
Well, like, it,
But he didn't recognize. Sorry, sir. He didn't recognize that you were using your education. You were making smart decisions in your entire career, and that you had to use those skills and that intellect to make good decisions. Right? Like, I'm sorry, but as an educator, that's insulting to hear a former teacher say something like that.
But I said to him, I'm like, but I do, because he was a physics teacher, and it's like, physics is the science of bodies in motion. It's like, I use momentum, center of mass. I use all this stuff all the time. And I think that's why I was safe. I knew what the body could physically do. It's like, I'm not doing the calculations, so I know the actual, you know, amount of force. And but it's
cosine
like
45.
Yeah. But I'm using all of the principles. And he was just like, wow, that's so cool. I'm like, yeah. It's like, but yeah, it is. Although when I told everybody I'm going to get into wrestling, everybody was supportive, which is nice. But I did have one person, it was my buddy's dad, that did he pulled me aside and it's like, okay, you know, if you're going to do this, that's fine. But it's like, don't become a bump. And it's like, that was the actual statement I valued the most. Because there was, okay, you're taking a risk in doing something crazy here. Don't just follow some pipe dream forever and end up a bum and not successful. And I think that might have been one of the reasons why I put that 5-year window in. It's like, I want to be successful at something. I think I might be successful at this, but I'm not going to be that guy. And there's a million other, you guys wouldn't have, you know, you don't go to indie shows, but there's guys that are on that Zed level indie show that have been there for 25 years and they think they're still going to make it. And it's like, I didn't want to be that. So
you don't want to be 45 and still wrestling at the bottom.
No.
So in terms of supportive, like, what was your family like? Like, so you drop out of university and you're at Christmas dinner. What was Grandma Storm's reaction at the Christmas dinner table?
My mom was always supportive, but she did. I really wish you'd finish university first. The biggest thing, my grandfather, who was a wrestling fan, he didn't want to hear that it wasn't real. He enjoyed his wrestling. And when it came up with anything about the, oh, I'm going to do this, it's like, he didn't want to hear it. He did not want that illusion shattered. And it was just, that was his thing. And that's where I've always explained wrestling to fans now with, again, oh, it's fake. It's like, to me, wrestling is Christmas. In that it's more fun when you believe.
Mm-hmm.
And as a wrestling fan, if you can be that, pick a, you know, 10-12-year-old kid, that if you actually sat him down and asked him, it's like, does Santa really come down the chimney and put presents under your tree? They're going to think about it and go, no, but they don't want to think about it. They just want to get up, open their presents and think Santa's real. And it's like, to me, that's what wrestling is. And it's like, if you can allow yourself to just have fun and believe it for a second. And it's like, that's what wrestling is to me. And similarly, if any of you had kids that were starting to get into wrestling, it's like wrestling become much like Christmas. Christmas becomes fun again when you have kids because you see them enjoying it and believing it and getting into it. And that's sort of, I think, the what's
well, the well, I mean, you're enjoying the story, right? I don't think we watched those Saturday night specials with the WWF stars and we were just as excited about the interactions between the good guys and the bad guys and the ongoing battles, the weekly battles that they had. That's what kept us and like going back because we wanted to see what was going to be the outcome of that sort of, you know, conflict between whomever, right? It wasn't, so you're right. If you believe that what you're seeing is real, you can also say, but they're also telling a story, right? You're watching part of the story. The wrestling match is just one part of that ongoing, you know, conflict between two people. And that's what we went back, right? We always wanted to watch Honky Tonk Man because he was such an easy guy to hate. Right. But I mean, it was like we want to get involved in that narrative. And that's what we liked about it. Right. Because I don't think we'd watch like we didn't watch the, you know, the Maple Leaf wrestling week after week. I can't remember. There was one guy, DeGagne or Gagne, Mike Gagne, I can't remember. Greg anyway, Gagne? Greg Gagne's, right? But I mean, they had had these little stories, but it wasn't as exciting as the WWF. Like, it made, you know, a spectacle of the story. And that's what sort of, I think, drew us in. Plus those little stickers we got from those chip, you know, Hostess potato chip bags.
Okay, here's a question for you. When was the last time any of you actually watched professional wrestling?
I'd say it's been a while.
But I kind of fell away from it after university. I always hoped my kids would get into it, but none of them ever did. So there's always one or two friends of my kids that were into it. So if my kid was going for a play date at their house, then I would go, I'm going to walk over and drop you off, right? And then I'd be playing with the wrestling ring in the corner with their buddy Gabe, who actually liked wrestling. And my friend, my daughter's just sitting there, when can I play with Gabe? Oh, when we're done wrestling, honey. But it's still, I mean, if it's flipping through the channels and my wife isn't in the room, then I'll watch it. If my wife has the remote, then there's no chance.
Okay. Sorry, I was going to say, I think maybe because back in high school, it was, you know, the event, it was the once every 3-4 months on Saturday nights where you had to be there to watch it. Brad, I don't even think it was the weekly shows, the Raws, that were even being broadcast. The only time that we could see WWF were these Saturday night specials. And so that's what I think it was drawn. Now, I mean, you can watch it, as you said, YouTube streaming. Maybe that's what sort of remove the mysticism of the sport or the entertainment, because if I can watch it anytime at any place I want, I'm not sort of drawn, because I can access it at 4 a.m. or 2 p.m. when we had to make it a moment. You had to go to Mickey's house to watch it on a Saturday night, right? We got together. And I think maybe that's what sort of pulled away from the entertainment or the viewers. If I can watch it anywhere, then I don't need to be there for those particular moments.
I think that's
definitely diluted a bit, right? When it's on all the time, it does get a little diluted. And to Chris's point, we were really looking forward to those month-to-month big events.
Yeah, I think that is the thing. With anything, though, it's like there's just so much. Like if you're a Marvel comic fan, there's so much content. If you're a whatever, there's so much. And yeah, Saturday Night Main Event, there was 6 of them a year.
Yeah.
And it's like we would get together, but if it's every single, you know, again, now there's like 3 hours of Raw on Monday, 2 hours of SmackDown on Friday. There's, you know, AEW for 2 hours on Wednesday, that you have to be like, it's your full-time job now. It's like, oh, I want to be a wrestling fan. It takes 30 hours a week where,
you know, what I really enjoyed lately though is some of those documentaries that have come out. I can't remember who's put them together, but on Rowdy Piper or the Ultimate Warrior or all these guys from back in the day, that I find the documentaries have really been put together well, and it gives you more bit of a background to the athletes, and those are really enjoyable.
Yeah, A&E and WWE have worked together and done half a dozen. You know, they did, you know, you mentioned them, I'm drawing a blank now, but all those guys, you know, they've done a half a dozen pretty decent documentaries, although it's hard for me because wrestling never gives you a 100% true story. And when you know the true story, it's like, ah, well, that's sort of true, but they've,
you mean it's fake? Are you telling me it's fake?
Everything. Life is fake.
Oh no.
No, but that's the thing that I joke with all my students, and we'll have to wrap this up at some point here. I joke when they come to school, the wrestling class, it's like, okay, once you're in wrestling, you have to accept the fact that you'll never enjoy anything ever again in your life, because you will see the work in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you become the biggest skeptic in the world. And it's like, you stop enjoying things.
So Lance, isn't it against our protocol to tell people that wrestling's fake? I mean, you know, you at least give us that. Like, wrestling's got to be real. COVID's fake. Vaccines are fake. Give us at least wrestling.
So what's your advice, Lance, like to all the high school students with their high school wrestling alliance listening to the podcast, if they have somewhat athletic ability? Like, is it as easy or easier or harder as it was back then to get into the industry? Like, what do you tell your students, the ones that have potential?
The ones that have potential, like, there is, it's so much easier to get into the wrestling business now. It's harder to make a living at the wrestling business now, but if you do succeed, you can make more money than you ever did before. So there's such a, you know, it's such a what's the word I'm looking for? A disparity in what you can achieve, where if you're a bottom end wrestling guy, it's an expensive hobby. It's not a career. But if you do manage to get to, you know, WWE, AEW, you know, New Japan level, it's like you can make a really good 6 or 7 figure income, and the lifestyle is easier now. You know, they actually have doctors there. You have guaranteed contracts now. They have, you know, medical staff. You've got a lighter schedule. It's so much better now. But you do have to have a unique something. Either, you know, either that personality that stands out, that you're the center of attention in every party you've ever been, really good athlete. Like, there's got to be something.
Lance, obviously you had that something, and I got to go, but I just wanted to say I'm really proud of you and what you've done and what you've accomplished, and the success you've achieved is, I think, beyond what I ever thought. It's just amazing to see that you got those belts, and you got to wrestle our idols. Again, just amazing.
Cool. Thanks, Mick. And again, thank you. I think if not for you, I might not have tried this path.
You should have signed a commission deal early on, Mick.
If he'd have just agreed to put me over in that tournament and asked for 5% of my earnings moving forward, he'd have been set.
That's true.
Okay.
See you. Cool. See
you.
Thanks, Mick.
Okay. Good to see you, Mick.
Any other soul-crushing wisdom that we can share with the youth today?
You will never enjoy anything ever again. You have zero chance of making it.
Just bunch of old guys.
Your YouTube channel has no views.
Yes. Well, if you have 10 followers on Twitter, you're probably not going to be a superstar.
Not influencing anybody.
Right. Well, thanks, guys. I do appreciate it. Was great catching up with you and Dennis carrying the conversation as usual. But I appreciate it. Hopefully some wrestling fans will enjoy hearing where I started and came from the people that were there. And let's keep in touch a little bit better. And again, that's probably more on me than you guys, because I know you guys get together, especially the Ontario crew. But we need to get together and stay in touch more, especially Dennis. I haven't seen you in forever. You look fantastic.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a full head of hair, but Phil and I.
Yeah, exactly.
Not fair.
Dennis hasn't changed a bit.
Not much, to be honest.
No.
Oh, you should have seen him last in the middle of COVID. The beard he had. I thought he was the Unabomber at one point.
COVID look.
Yeah. The Hacksaw Jim Duggan beard. Yeah.
It was close.
Hey, I turned Hacksaw Jim Duggan against America and made him join Canada.
That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Good job.
You can make Hacksaw Jim Duggan turn his back on his country. You're doing something.
Yeah. And that's as soon as that. And then as a result of that, the U.S. put all the softwood lumber tariffs in on 2x4s.
That's all my fault.
That's all on you, Lance.
That's on you.
All right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Take care.
Great.
Well, thanks, Lance.
Take care. Have a good day.
Yeah. Thanks.
Bye. See you guys.